Very pleasant. Good evening to you. If you take out your Bibles tonight and turn to Acts chapter 28. Acts chapter 28 will be the launching place for our sermon this evening as we talk about some things that maybe have a little bit of bearing on our life, that maybe help us with various different crises and criticisms and cynicisms that come our way. Sure glad to see you tonight. I appreciate you being here. And I would say something about the horns, but I wouldn't get through it. They're wonderful friends, and I'm not even going to try. Love you so much, and hope that you have a good trip. You know, in Acts chapter 28, we read in verse 1 through 6, "And when they were escaped, then they knew that the island was called Melita. And the barbarous people showed us no little kindness, for they kindled a fire and received us every one, because of the present rain and because of the cold. And when Paul had gathered a bundle of sticks and laid them on the fire, there came a viper out of the heat and fastened on his hand. And when the barbarians saw the venomous beast hanging on his hand, they said amongst themselves, 'No doubt this man is a murderer, whom though he hath escaped the sea, yet the vengeance sufficeth not, or suffereth not to live.' And he shook off the beast into the fire, and felt no harm. Howbeit they looked when he should have been swollen or fallen down dead suddenly. But after they had looked a great while, and saw no harm come to him, they changed their minds, and said that he was a god." Paul the Apostle is one of the most fascinating characters of the New Testament. And I've heard my brother Saul say many times that he's one of his favorite New Testament characters. Paul was a faithful witness to the life-changing power of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, as he witnessed from the first day there on the road to Damascus until the last days of his life, when he gave his life in the name of the Lord in the city of Rome. Paul was a mighty preacher of the gospel and one that suffered because of his choices. This passage here that we're looking at tonight finds us on the way to Rome as Paul is about to stand trial before Caesar. He in some time past has said that he would not go back to Jerusalem where they wanted to try him, but he would appeal to Caesar, which was his right as a Roman citizen. And so now he finds himself going back to Caesar. Paul would spend years as a prisoner in Rome before that event would happen, and he would eventually lay down his life as a faithful martyr to the Lord Jesus. In chapter 27, we find the story of Paul and his companions and how they're called out in a terrible storm. And everyone on the ship is supposed that they're going to die. Everyone, that is, except Paul. I want you to read with me Acts chapter 27 as we see the scene that takes place before the one we've just read. This is a very simple lesson tonight, but I think one that can help us in various different ways. In Acts chapter 27, we want to begin in verse 22. It says, "And now I exhort you to be of good cheer, for there shall be no loss of any man's life among you, but of the ship. For there stood by me this night the angel of God, whose I am and whom I serve, saying, 'Fear not, Paul, thou must be brought before Caesar, and lo, God hath given thee all them that sail with thee. Wherefore, sirs, be of good cheer, for I believe God that it shall be even as it was told me. Howbeit, we must be cast upon a certain island.' But when the 14th night was come, as we were driven up and down the Adrian, about midnight, the shipmen deemed that they were near to some country, and sounded and found it 20 fathoms. And when they had gone a little further, they sounded again and found it 15 fathoms. Then fearing lest we should have fallen upon the rocks, they cast forth anchors out of the stern and wished for the day. And as the shipmen were about to flee out of the ship, when they had let down the host of the sea, or the boat, into the sea under the color, as though they would have cast anchors out of the foreship, Paul said to the centurion, to the soldiers, 'Except these abide in the ship, you cannot be saved.'
Then the soldiers cut off the ropes of the boat and let her fall off. And while the day was coming on, Paul besought them all to take meat, saying, "This day is the 14th day that you have tarried and continued fasting, having taken nothing. Wherefore I pray to you to take some meat, for this is for your health. For there shall not a hair fall from the head of any of you." And when he had thus spoken this, he took some bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And when they had broken it, and he began to eat. Then they were of all good cheer, and they also took some bread and some meat. And when they were all in the ship, and were 260 souls. And when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship and cast out the wheat into the sea. And when it was day, they knew not the land, but they discovered a certain creek with a shore into which they were minded, if they were to be possible, to thrust in the ship. And when they had taken up the anchors, and they committed themselves into the sea, and loosed the rudder and bands, and hoisted up the mainsail and mainsail to the wind, and made towards the shore, and falling into a place where the two seas met, they ran the ship aground, and four parts struck fast and remained unmovable, but the hinder part was broken with the violence of the waves. And the soldiers' counsel was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim out and escape. But the centurion, willing to save Paul, kept them from their purpose and commanded that they that could swim should cast themselves first into the sea and get to land. And the rest, some on the boards and some on the broken pieces of the ship. And so it came to pass, they had all escaped to the land. Now that's an interesting story that occasionally we come across, and maybe you've read it time and time again. The Lord sent an angel on this particular occasion to comfort Paul in this situation, to tell him that the ship was not going to be lost, but all the lives were going to be spared. But it was conditional. The ship was going to be lost. They were going to be saved, but they had to stay to the end. Paul and his shipmates become marooned on an island that is called Melita in the New Testament there. Later on, it's called Malta, and it's a little island located in the Mediterranean Sea between Sicily and Africa. And like I said, it's called Malta today. When the survivors land on the island, they're met by what some say as friendly natives. And the King James there reads a little rougher, and it calls them barbarians. It just means strangers or people they didn't know. Verse 2 tells us that they were inhabitants of Melita, and that they were quick to offer aid. They were quick to offer comfort to Paul and the others. And there were 276 of them that were saved on that island. Now, the story gets interesting. And this is where the lesson will come from. Paul's helping to gather wood for the fire. And as he lays the bundle of fire sticks, or the sticks upon the flames, a viper comes up out of that. And as we tell the children, and it's a familiar story to some of them, the viper comes up and grabs hold of him and hangs on him there. And Paul apparently, just kind of shakes it off. The snake was maybe lethargic in the cold. The fire heated it up, and quickly it revived. It got a hold of him, and he just shakes it off. Paul faced the trial when he was bitten by a poisonous snake. Now, let's back up a little bit into Mark 16, and we read, "And they shall take up serpents, and if they drink any deadly thing, it shall not hurt them, and they shall lay hands on the sick, and they shall recover." Now, again, I say this is a simple lesson with a few simple points. Paul's life was spared. It had been prophesied that that's what would happen with the apostles, that if they took up any snake, they would be spared. Now, I asked Brother Floyd, as I always do when he comes in, what his experience was taking up snakes. He heard about churches that take up snakes. When I was in Virginia, there was a church there in Virginia that they handled snakes. And I think maybe some of you have seen the show on TV where these guys, these preachers in this church, they handle snakes. And that's all well and good and interesting, but that's not the point of the passage. But he said that what you used to do is you take the old black snakes and you hang them in the tree so that it would rain. Well, brother, quit hanging them in the tree because there's plenty of rain out there. But let's get to the snakes. He shook off the snake. Well, what am I going to get out of this lesson tonight? It's almost too simple. We're going to shake off the snakes. You look at verse 3. And when Paul had gathered a bundle of sticks and laid them on the fire, there came a viper out of the heat and fastened on his hand. Well, first of all, I'm just going to say we shake off the snake of crisis. All of these are going to be seized. It's going to be easy. When Paul was bitten, it was a moment of real crisis. Everybody latched onto it. They all saw what was going on. It was a serious moment in his life. It was a poisonous snake. It was a crisis. This was the one that could have done him in. Could have claimed his life. Of course, we know that God took care of it. But here's the problem. The crisis came when Paul was engaged in doing good. And that's what I want to look at. After the episode on the ship where he saved everyone's life, Paul could have demanded special treatment. He could have said, well, it was because of what I did and because of my Lord and you know, I need this special treatment now. But he was on the island in the time of crisis. And he did his part. Maybe that's a lesson to the young and old alike. We seem to believe that our faithful service to the Lord is some kind of shield against trouble in our life. I've done right. I've done good. Why is this crisis happening in my life? Have you ever been there? Have you ever thought that? I've done all the things I'm supposed to do. I've lived by the rules. And yet this snake, this serpent, this crisis has come in my life. Well, ask Job about that. Job was a man who lived in the way that he ought to live. And God said to Satan, here's a man that you will not find any like him. And yet Job suffered. Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego, the kids know, they stood up when others would not stand up and they did what was right and they ended up in a fiery furnace. You had Daniel who was thrown in the lion's den. You had Elijah and the disciples. And you had the Lord Himself. In simple language, I'm just saying troubles are a part of everybody's life. In Job 14, verse 1, it says, man that is born of a woman is of a few days and full of trouble. You know, Brother Sister Horn and you young Horns, you're in for trouble. You'd be in for trouble if you stayed here. No matter where you go, you're going to find trouble. You're going to find crisis. You're never going to get away from it. Sometimes people say, well, let's get away from all this problem. Let's move somewhere else. That's why people jump congregations sometimes. There's a crisis. Well, let's go somewhere else. You're always going to have crisis. John 16:33 says, these things I have spoken to you, that in me you might have peace. In the world you have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. When troubles come, as they will, they can just derail our faith, can't they? We often feel as though God is holding out on us. Why is this happening to me? Why am I having to go through this crisis? Brother, sister, so-and-so aren't. And we feel that we deserve better treatment. We're the ones that held it all together when everything was a problem. And now we're the ones with the snake. Do like Paul did. Put your faith in the promises of the Lord and believe in Him for the help you need. In times of trouble, we have some very precious promises. no matter where we live. First of all, remember this. We have His presence. Hebrews 13:5, let your conversation, let your conduct, let your life be without covetousness and be content with such things as you have. For He has said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. It doesn't matter what we have or don't. We can be content because He is with us. We need to remember His precious victory. 1 Corinthians 15:57, but thanks be to God which giveth us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. What is the book of Revelation about to those who were living in that time? They were suffering through all kinds of crises. And it said, you can overcome. You can overcome. It doesn't matter what crisis you face. Sickness, sorrow, death, persecution. You can overcome. His purposes and His plans for us may take us places we never thought we'd go. 2 Corinthians 4:17, for our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. It's tough now, but there's glory ahead. There's glory ahead. And then also His power. Ephesians chapter 3, verse 20, now to Him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us. God is able to do above what we can think. We can think great things. But God says, I can do above that. I can do beyond that. Trust in Me. I think sometimes we've just forgotten to trust. Matthew chapter 28 and 18, Jesus came and spake unto them, saying, all power is given to Me in heaven and in earth. If He's got all power in heaven and earth, why are we so fretful? Why are we so concerned? He will move heaven and earth to meet your need. You remember Elijah? He moved heaven and earth, it seems. Moses, Joshua, be strong and courageous. I remember one time Brother Horn was at a luncheon with me, and we were at Long John Silver's. He likes to eat there. It's kind of a greasy kind of place, you know. But I remember eating there, and he said, I want to challenge you to do a sermon tonight. He said, can you do one on being strong and courageous? And I said, yeah, I can do one on being strong and courageous. And that night I did one on being strong and courageous. But that's what Joshua was told by God. You're going into a new land. You're going to conquer this new land. Be strong and courageous. Doesn't matter where you go. God will go with you. What about Moses? This afternoon at Creekside, we heard a lesson about the glory of God and how Moses had said, let the glory of God, let me see Your glory pass by and let me see Your glory. We want to see God's glory, but we've got to fight the battles first. The disciples who said, teach us faith, teach us to pray. Mary was the one at the tomb who Jesus said, Mary. Sister Finley said, work up a sermon just on that. I'm working on it. He knows our name too. And then Martha, you're troubled about many things. But He knew her troubles. And Jairus, the child, was returned. And countless others. Shake off the snake of crisis. Simple lesson. What's another snake? Verse 4. And when the barbarians, the island people, saw the venomous beast hanging on his head, I love the King James, they said amongst themselves, no doubt this man is a murderer, whom, though he hath escaped the sea, yet vengeance suffereth not him to live. As soon as Paul is bitten by the snake, people begin to criticize. They were very suspicious people, it seems, and they were suspicious of Paul, and they assumed that the viper had bit Paul because Paul had some evil in his life. You get what you deserve. He must have been bad. And their view, he was being punished because he was a wicked man. Neptune, the god of the sea, couldn't destroy him. So now Nemesis, the goddess in charge of dispensing justice, was going to get him in the end. What's the simple lesson here? People are often quick to criticize what they don't understand, what they don't see, what they don't hear. Some of you have been the object of criticism. When have we not been on one side or the other of that? You're not alone. Some of the greatest people who ever lived have been criticized. And you will be criticized wherever you go. Some of you have been the object of severe criticism of others. You ever had somebody just lick the cherry off your lollipop? Just, you know that phrase, don't you? No, Sister May, you don't know that. Just take the cherry right off. Take the wind out of yourselves. You know that one. Sometimes they don't mean to, but sometimes they deliberately set out to do it. And it hurts. They murmured in the Old Testament when they were hungry, when they were thirsty, when they were tired to Moses. Jesus faced criticism from his enemies. He was called a blasphemer in Matthew 9:3. He was accused as being in league with Satan. Have you ever had that bad? Sometimes. If you're not careful, the criticism you face from others will cause you to become defeated no matter where you go. There are times when you and I deserve criticism, and rightly so. But there are times when we are wrong and we need to be shown our errors. And there are other times when we're trying to do our best and still we're criticized, we're misunderstood, we're misrepresented, and it doesn't matter which side of the rainbow you live on. Does it? Turn your Bibles to Numbers chapter 11. Numbers chapter 11. If you're not careful, criticism will make you want to just give up and quit. You ever been there? You ever been there? If you haven't, you will. But don't let it. No, don't let it, Sister Debbie, don't. Numbers 11, 1 through 14. And the people were murderers, speaking evil in the ears of Jehovah. And when Jehovah heard it, his anger was kindled, and the fire of Jehovah burnt among them and devoured in the uttermost part of the camp. And the people cried unto Moses, and Moses prayed unto Jehovah, and the fire abated. And the name of the place was called Taberah, because the fire of Jehovah burnt among them. And the mixed multitude that was among them lusted exceedingly, and the children of Israel also wept again and said, who shall give us flesh to eat? We remember the fish which we did eat in Egypt for naught, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, the garlic. But now our soul is dried away. There's nothing at all to save this manna to look upon. And the manna was like the coriander seed, and the appearance thereof, the appearance of Bedlam. The people went about and gathered it and ground it in mills, or beat it in mortars, or boiled it in pots, and made cakes of it. And the taste of it was like the taste of fresh oil. That sounds good. And when the dew fell upon the camp in the night, the manna fell upon it. And Moses heard the people weeping throughout their families, every man at the door of his tent. The anger of Jehovah was kindled greatly, and Moses was displeased. And Moses said to Jehovah, "Wherefore hast thou dealt ill with thy servant? And wherefore have I not found favor in thy sight, that thou layest the burden of all this people upon me? Have I conceived all this people? Have I brought them forth? And thou shouldest say unto me, carry them in thy bosom as a nursing father carrieth the sucking child unto the land which thou swearest unto their fathers? Whence should I have flesh to give unto these people? For they weep unto me, saying, give us flesh that we may eat. I'm not able to bear all this people alone, because they are too heavy for me." Oh, there's so much to be said from that one verse alone. Fire had gone through the camp, destroyed them. Moses cried out. What's the first thing they did? Complain. We get through one storm or one crisis, and the first thing we do is complain. And then Moses felt the pressure. You know, there are people who take pride in themselves about their candor. You ever known someone like that? And it degenerates into brutality. They're always able to say it in such a way that's of controlled candor, and it burns harder than anything else. I found it interesting. One such man said to John Wesley, "Mr. Wesley, I pride myself in speaking my mind. That is my talent." And he said, "I wish the Lord would have you bury that talent." And sometimes people just need to bury the talent they have to be so critical. But what do you do in the face of criticism? Which is going to happen. It's going to happen in the family. It's going to happen in the schoolyard. It's going to happen in the church. If you're a Moses or a Joshua, you continue to faithfully lead your family or the church. If you're Jesus, you go to the cross despite the critics. If you're wise, you will consider the source of the criticism. Some people deserve to be listened to, and they ought to be listened to. Others, well, they don't. My dad used to say of my brother, and maybe I've said it before, he'd say, "Rod has some good things to say. Listen to him. When he has good things to say, let it come in and put your finger there and let it stay in there, in your head." He said, "But if he says something that doesn't make sense, just let it go one ear out the other." And that's how I dealt with my brother. Half the time, it was a straight line, straight through. But occasionally, he had something good to say. But you continue on. Look at Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. Verse 1 through 3.
"Therefore let us also, seeing we are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, lay aside every weight and the sin which doth easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, hath sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that hath endured such gainsaying of sinners against himself, that ye wax not weary, fainting in your souls." Shake off the snake of criticism. Got one more snake for you. Shake off the snake of cynicism. Verse 6. "Howbeit, they looked when he should have swollen and fallen down dead suddenly, But after they had looked a great while and saw no harm come to him, they changed their minds and said, well, he must be a god. Well, what do I get from that? Again, it's a simple lesson. The people are just sitting there watching Paul, waiting for him to swell up, to fall down, to die. They're expecting a great fall from a great apostle, and they're cynical, and they look for nothing good to come of the situation. Nothing good is going to come of this. How many in this room have been the object of the cynic's words? You will never make it. This church won't last. You will fail. Your marriage will fail. This isn't real. Some people are just waiting for us to fail. If you're not careful, the prophecy of the cynic can become self-fulfilling. You make a mistake and you say, what's the use? No one else has confidence. I might as well quit too. The cynics do not have the last word. You do. Shake off the viper of cynicism and prove the doubters wrong by your faithful obedience to the Lord. You can do it. I'm not going to take the time to read the whole thing in 1 Samuel. But I do want to read verse 28. You remember when Samuel was coming around looking for the one who was going to be the next king? Surely it's this one. Surely it's this one. And then later on, David comes to the battle to see what's going on. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David. And he said, why art thou come down? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thy heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. Sometimes family hurts the most, don't they? But then the king, in verse 33, and Saul said to David, thou art not able to go against the Philistine to fight with him, for thou art a youth, and he's a man of war from his youth. You can't do it. There's nothing worse than someone else not believing in you. And of Jesus. Turn to John 7. John 7. John 7:1-8. If you guys weren't leaving tonight, this would be a lot easier. And after these things, Jesus walked in Galilee, for he would not walk in Judea, because the Jews sought to kill him. Now the feast of the Jews, the feast of the tabernacles, was at hand. His brethren therefore said unto him, depart hence and go into Judea, that thy disciples also may behold thy works which thou doest. For no man doeth anything in secret, and himself seeketh to be known openly. If thou doest these things, manifest thyself to the world. For even his brethren, his brothers, flesh and blood, did not believe on him. Jesus therefore saith unto them, my time is not yet come, but your time is already. The world cannot hate you, but me it hateth, because I testify of it, that the works are evil. Go you up to the feast. I go not up to the feast, because my time is not yet fulfilled. His family said, what you're doing? It's not the right thing. You're doing the wrong thing. If you want this out of life, you ought to be doing
something different. You ever had somebody say, don't do that, don't go there? Jesus had His own brothers say, you're not doing it right. And they didn't believe in Him. There's going to come times when your own family or brethren are not going to believe in you. What are you going to do? Quit?
John 19:30. When Jesus therefore had received the vinegar, He said, it is finished. And He bowed His head and gave up His spirit. Jesus had a different course to take. Matthew 28:6. They came and they said, He is not here, for He is risen. Even as He said, come see the place where the Lord lay. No one but you determines the quality and length of your service to the Lord. Are you listening? No one determines the quality and length of your service to the Lord. There is not a cynic, there is not a critic, and there is not a crisis that could drive you away from the glory of God. Take out your songbooks. Shake off that snake. You know, there may be something you need to do to change your life tonight. I don't know exactly what you may need to do. You may need the prayers of the congregation. You may need to be baptized. I don't know. I don't know what your track of life is going to be from here for any of us. But I want to share one last story for you, and then the lesson is yours. Alakwari was a Tanzanian runner. He was from a foreign country. He was known as the last man in the marathon at the 1968 Olympics. He arrived in the stadium a little more than an hour after the winner, Mambo Waldi. His leg was bloody and bandaged, and he was wincing with pain at every step. Later, he was asked why he continued, as there was no chance of winning. To this question, he answered, my country did not send me to Mexico City to start the race. They sent me to finish. Finish the race. No matter what, the critics, the cynics, or the crisis. Shake off the snake. If we can help you tonight, won't you?